Off the Ball, GAA.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit frustrating that we don't get to play the new rules in Sigerson as well, just to really see how it, like, we could flow from one game to another without thinking about it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
For something a little bit different to end the week, Peter Ryan joins us in studio. So, to give you context here, I was at the Pendulum Summit last week in Dublin at the Convention Centre, and there was a load of presenters presenting about their extraordinary life, and there was a segment about sport, really, particularly, and how it relates to business. And all of these presenters came out with big presentations behind them, and everybody was watching this slide from slide to slide, and it was like, oh, yeah, that's a good business opportunity for everyone, and I can see the remits of that. And then up steps Peter Ryan, and he comes on stage, and there's no presentation in the back. It's just Peter in a suit, and he's talking away confidently about his life to date. And there's a few minutes go by without Peter dropping the bombshell of, I lost 90% of my vision in 14 months at the age of 20, was it?
Yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, 19 turning 20.
19
yeah.
turning 20. So Peter's a former Tipperary minor hurler. He was approached by a Celtic scout, Kennedy Cup, back in the day playing football. And then you get this diagnosis, your life turns upside down, and you end up being a Paralympian and running incredible marathons and running from Maidenhead to Mizenhead. It's an extraordinary story. Peter, where do you want to start? First of all, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, and apologising about talking about soccer when you're sitting beside Keith here, and I'm still going on about Kennedy Cup 30 years later nearly, but no, not to worry. Look, thanks again for, I suppose, bringing us on. Like, say, Pendulum, it's definitely one of the bigger stages I've ever spoke on, but thankfully it went down well, and the dog ate my homework. There was no presentation, but it's still, like say, it was a life story. So how do you try and throw that onto a presentation, like pictures of me? Like, it's all very egotistical. So I just wanted to bring people on a bit of a journey, and we only had 15 minutes to try and do it and do it justice and let it breed. But look, thankfully, you reached out off the back of it anyway. So So no, it's been a cool little journey for the last 15 odd years, as weird as that sounds.
So to bring people up to speed, so you're flying it, and as you described on stage last week and subsequently in interviews with the Tommy Tiernan show as well, which is amazing to watch, people haven't seen it, is you're a happy-go-lucky late teens, early 20s person, and that you have everything going for you. Life's great, you're very sporty, you're popular, you have a good job as well from a young age. And it's one pre-season training in the summer, right? You come back and you're making a few mistakes and it's uncharacteristic, and you're like, oh geez, I probably need contact lenses.
That's as simple and as innocuous as the whole thing was. Good job could be an overstatement. I was working as a labourer for plasterers, but I was getting abused daily. But I understood the value of a 50 quid note. That was it. Like, you leave school, you're driving your car, you're cool, you're coming into your independence. Yeah. And like I say, sports looked after me. Like, it's where I made my friends, it's where I made my enemies at that age. It's like, it just taught me so much. And like I say, you're wearing a tip tracksuit or you're playing decent at soccer, your whole personality forms around it. Mm. And you're not thinking 5-10 years down the line, you're not thinking of anything other than make a few bob for the weekend, have the crack and try and be cool, whatever that is. And it was pre-season with the GA team. And again, like January, February time of year, I was able to, I suppose, excuse a few mistakes. I was able to say, oh, I was out last night, and you know, if I wasn't shook, I wouldn't have made that mistake.
Yeah.
Or, oh, it's February, my hands are cold. All these kind of little silly things. And then ultimately, I went for that eye test and there was a blur in one eye at that stage, which is crazy because I was playing away, doing my GA thing, and like the other eye was compensating at the time. So it was that's when, I suppose, the whole like shock and awe happens. You get wrote an emergency letter to go to Waterford A&E, and boom, 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 you're on this new journey.
I had never heard of, was it Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy, until you mentioned this last week.
Nor I, Colm. Nor I. It's funny because like that, there's a hereditary component to it.
Yeah.
But like, it's one of these you find out when you're in the journey. So I was talking about last week as well, like I give 3 months. I was being tested inside out, upside down. They're ruling out tumours, ruling out this, ruling out that. Because all I had to work on was a blur in one eye. So eventually, I suppose, between like there was a little bit of chaos sitting in family wise, and obviously people knew there's something up with Peter and all that kind of stuff. So it kind of came out of the woodwork. It's like you actually have a family member with an eye condition, like you're talking kind of third cousin type stuff. Like, I literally only know these people now because we're the blinkies. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like I was lived as like known cousins kind of thing. But so like they eventually did a test for that and it came back, and rare and all as it is, takes up, again, we won't get into names too much, but yeah, it's a degenerative condition. So over that, they kind of say 9 to 14 months, it's going to take roughly 80 to 90% of your vision. How that looks like with me, it's my central vision in both eyes. It was only in one eye at that stage. So it was a crazy diagnosis to get, like at 19, you're sitting there shock and awe. And that's why I always kind of, in the talks, I describe who I was and who came to that table and who was getting that diagnosis, because he was happy-go-lucky, he was all these things and independent and making a few bob, and you don't know what blind means. Do you know what I mean? You're just getting told you're going to go 90% blind, and it's going to, say I'm 6 months in, you probably have another 8 to 9 months of losing your sight. It's like,
yeah,
like, what's 90% is what I say. Like, I was never going around
calculating it.
Yeah. Like, you know, we hear a 20/20, but like, what does that actually mean? Whereas you're going legally blind. And even who is blind? You're trying to, like, touch your network. It's like, Joe, I didn't hang out with blind people. I didn't even know what disability was. You had all these, Joe, and it's 2009, 2010. Like, a lot of the vernacular we have is a bit probably more in tune, but like, disability, like, didn't mean anything to me. Like, you didn't know, we barely had ramps. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was, and Paralympics, none of that stuff, all that came down the line, but I was just terrified. All I wanted to be was the old me.
It's an incredible thing to live through, in that you were told, is it from 9 to 14 months you will lose 80 to 90% of your vision? And that's exactly how it panned out, was it? It was 14 months equaled 90% gone. But it's a gradual loss rather than one instant.
100%. And it's a ticking time bomb. And you don't, and like I say, the looming question is, what's 90? Because, like, while you're losing, and like, I was working on building sites, and the company I was with were phenomenal. They kept me going as long as they could. They were bringing me into work. They knew the crack. I was actually working up in Terminal 2 up in Dublin Airport at the time, and they brought me back. They were like, they had a workshop in Turles. They're like, be a bit nearer to home, hospital appointments, all that kind of stuff. So they gave me the structure, kept me in the job, but like, I could see literally week by week, month by month, like, through my daily job, like, okay, can't see the measuring tape properly, can't see the, do you know what I mean? You could see, or you're going, I was trying to stay playing sport as long as I could, and right, the puck out, so I can't see the puck out from the fair goalkeeper, I can't see this. And then you're on the sideline watching the games, and you realise, like, so it was happening in front of you, but you don't know where the finish line is. Like, 90% could be a sliver. It could be, do you know what I mean? It's like,
unbelievable.
Yeah,
like, every day you wake up, you're reminded of it instantly, and it's
100%.
Is it literally daily it gets worse? Or
like, I wasn't noticing it daily, but like kind of almost a child growing, like, all of a sudden, like, it, like, there's this new barometer of, oh, right, there's been a little jump here. It's like, Joe, like, whether it was, like, eventually you get to a place where I can't see my feet if I look down, if I'm brushing my teeth, I can't see my face, I have no central vision, so anything I'm looking at directly, I can't see. Which, look, I have solace in now, I'm 10, 12 years down the line, I'm scanning, I have my peripheral vision, which is fundamentally huge, but I didn't even know how much of that will I have, or, do you know what I mean, or what, is it enough to adapt? And I'm walking around somewhat confident 12 years later, but like, I was like Bambi. Do you know, like, in a way, I was afraid to get a train to go up to Dublin. I wouldn't do all these things because how does it, like I had my independence taken away because everything goes through the filter of how you used to do it. So I had to retrain all these things. And like, say you throw in like just an absolute, like, running away from disability, running away from OTs, trying to show you how the iPad over there, that talks now, like the phone talks, all these kind of things. Like, I didn't want anything that said you have a disability, there's something wrong with you. Even down to going to a fucking restaurant with my mates, like, if they start reading out the menu to me, I'd start freaking out. I'd like, if anyone hears you reading out this menu, they're going to assume either I can't read or da-da-da-da-da, and you're just, you know, like, you're just in denial. Like, you go through all those stages.
Yeah.
Like, it's a bit like, say, you're 19, you don't have the tools to adapt to that.
No, so at this point, just before the diagnosis, sport-wise, is it just hurting or playing? The soccer's finished by
Soccer's finished. Like, you know, ourselves kind of 15, 16. Back then, like, the League of Ireland surge happened now, but like, if you weren't going across the pond by 16, you're not going across the pond. So, yeah, like, local lad, there's a lot of credibility and tip playing football and hurling.
You were the Noel McGrath vintage, were you?
I was the Noel McGrath vintage, but of a different ilk. Noel, don't know how into the GA you are, Keith. Noel was like bit of a phenomenon down in Tip, but I was a reliable dude that might be thrown into Mark Noel McGrath and crack him on the elbows every now and again. But he's actually a good friend still, and like, you know what I mean, the lads in Lochmore, we grew up playing against him the whole way. So James Barry would have been a club man of mine. Bubbles was on the same panel, like, so there was a few on that panel that made it the whole way through, like, in
and
fairness.
How far into, say, the 14 month journey from the 90% decrease in vision, did you stop playing hurling? Do you remember the day where you were like, I actually can't continue anymore?
I actually remember the game where I kind of silently quit, yeah. Right. I didn't make a big announcement, but an under 21 match, yeah, playing against actually Loughmore, as you mentioned it. And I'd been playing a couple of games and I was starting to turn into a little bit of a dirty version of myself. Like, I was like, Joe, because you're only right, the ball is, it's only when it's like within a 10-yard radius. So, like, you're reacting way later. So, I was kind of getting to a place where I was, wasn't actually following the ball more so than just following my man. And there's a lot of context. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like, right, if he's moving this way, there's something to it. But, like you say, like, the late tackles to this, that, and the other. And then I just got to a place, yeah, that game, it was on the rag. And I just remember having a little sobby tear for myself in the showers. I was like, oh, it's not going to, John. That was, I never probably valued how much sport kind of was wrapped into my identity. But, like, John, when it's gone, then you realise, oh, because I loved the idea of being good, but being cool. Do you know what I mean? I'd go to a concert, go on the pace, but still try and play well.
Yeah.
And it was so much of that, which is weird. Like, it's like this kind of fear of failure. So whereas, because if you put yourself out there, to be, you know, I hated the idea of being the totalitarian lad in the team. I wanted to be good, but still have the bond with the dressing room, do you know, that kind of way. Whereas, like, you can do it all. Whereas, like,
for the social side of it.
But, like, say, a lot of that was born out of, like, just not wanting to put yourself in that vulnerable place of, let's be disciplined, let's do it right. And look, you're 19, you're figuring out things your own way. But I definitely didn't realise how much sport was to me until it was gone.
I think it's amazing, you know, we obviously skimmed over your life there, really, but when you get that diagnosis, and as you say, like, football was a huge part of my identity. Even now I walk down the road, people say, there's the footballer. So for that to be taken away from you, I know you weren't quite into football, a bit of gab, a bit of running, for that to be taken away from you, you know, the mental health struggles that you must go to. You're at a T-junction there in your life, and you can either become a victim and just stay in your house and go like that, or you can go the absolute opposite like you did. And my God, it must have took some big cojones to go and do what you did. I think it's amazing. I have a blind cousin. John is I think he's near enough 90% blind like yourself, and I see his daily struggles, and I look at him and I look at you, and I just think it's really, really inspiring what you're doing.
Cheers.
The first time I met you in RTE, I was supposed to be watching the match, and when you started talking, Peter, my mouth just opened, and I was absolutely just enthralled in the story. Because, as I say, for that sort of stuff to be taken away from you, for your vision, 90% of your vision to be taken away, the world's a very, very scary place, but you seem to have dealt with it really well.
And, you know what, firstly, thanks a mil for saying, but, like, I'd be doing myself and the whole story an injustice if I was kind of projecting to the world, you know what, I went from that to Everton great. Like, there was 3 years in between where I was, like, I remember that diagnosis so well, and I remember, like, the games I played where I just started pushing everyone away, and there'd be commonalities in your own backstory. Like, I know maybe you didn't, like, I know you don't drink, but, like, I ended up in a treatment centre for alcohol. Yeah. I kind of found a bit of solace in that space. I found a bit of normality, and it was escapism, and I was able to have
the
a
drinking.
Laugh. And I was able to have a laugh with the lads, and I was all, like, my whole raison d'etre around the time was to, like, make life as much like the old life as possible. Like, sport was gone, work was gone at this stage, but, like, in a pub, group of five mates, in your local, like, do you know what I mean? It was very familiar. Elbow worked fine. The lads would look after you to bring you from pub to pub or whatever, but, like, it was all just kind of, there was no real talk. Like, anyone asks you, how are you doing? How are you finding it? I just pushed it all away. And in a polite way, I would be like, oh, sure, it is what it is. And you know yourself. Yeah. And I always say, it's literally Shakespeare's phrase. It's like polite, meaningless words. But, like, that's all it was like never letting anyone see what was going on. But look, I'm phenomenally lucky. I do have great family, great support network, like Rural Ireland, the GA Club, Upshur Sherman, like, they all rallied. There was just an abundance of people wanting to help. And eventually, look, that kind of led itself to, you need to make some changes here, and it's not terminal. And thankfully, like, I started getting hooked on the buzz of, well, what else can you do? Because, as you heard last week, I was like, visually impaired Peter doesn't exist. So I have to kind of figure out who he is and what he is. And that's kind of what I used.
A line that you repeat, and certainly when in doing research about you, is, and this is paraphrasing it, is that you didn't know if you had a drink problem or a life problem.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
So, like, bring us on that journey. So you get the diagnosis, you stop playing sport. Do you stop working on the site at that stage? So there's a lot of time. in your life?
So, like, in order, I don't know whether sport or the job, which one was first or second. Like, I kept both of them going as long as I physically could and as long as it was palatable. But, like, say, blind dudes on building sites and everything that goes with it. I have a nice little thumb here from a bandsaw there one day that I could have been missing my whole thumb. But I was like, you know, I was starting to, I was like, this isn't good for anyone.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they're, while they helped me through that almost like psychological phase of just giving you a routine, because like that's 40, 45 hours of going to a job where you have to think a little less about what's going on, where is this end and that kind of stuff. But yeah, so when they were gone, like I say, that's nearly 60 hours a week of, you're blind, what does that mean? Who's blind? I was like, I don't know. Like, can blind people have a job? Can they have a wife? Can they have a kid? Like, they obviously can't have a car. They can't have kids because I can't collect the kids from school. Like, I was thinking through a rural Ireland lens of what my friends do. They all work on building sites. I can't work there anymore. Do you know that kind of way? I didn't go to university. I wasn't like overly educated. Now I don't. Like, what your sell was to the world was a, like, you completely devalued your whole offering. So it was a, like, and that's negativity, obviously, and that, but that's where sitting still and thinking and not talking out loud or not explaining, I'm a little scared, or I was afraid to say to people, sorry, do you mind giving me a hand? I'm visually impaired. Do you know what I mean? Stuff as simple
like
as
the restaurant
that.
Story, isn't it? The menu. Yeah. Was the drinking, it was largely sociable, was it? It was actually with friends all the time.
I would say I socialised to the point that I became antisocial. It was with friends. It was very like, it was rarely brown bag and under a bridge. Like, it was, but I was a complete socialite. Like, if you think, I was 20, so, and I had no job. So I was going to every college campus in the country. I was like drinking in Limerick, then you're in Galway, then you're in Waterford. Like, I was, do you know what I mean? I knew all the spots. You have people that'll text, and it's like, and ultimately the whole thing, obviously it's escapism, but like, you can't be sad if you're at a party. And that's what it was. It was party, party, party. But like, you know, who was I lying to? Only myself. And that came to a head, like, because obviously there's people like my folks or people like my family that could see Peter is the common denominator here, 6 days a week at different like, you know, and they knew I was hurting. And like I say, and I know, like, there was some good times in the sense, some of the only bit of sharing I ever did was probably on an all day Sunday session and explained to some of the lads, and you have a little cry and all that kind of stuff. But it was the only place where there was any emotion. But no, it was complete escapism. Like I say, was I a 22-year-old alcoholic? Was I a 22-year-old with a life problem who drank the absolute whatever out of it?
And to this day, what do you think the answer?
I honestly don't know, because I think wise can, like, do you know what I mean? I just stay going on that roundabout and roundabout, because like, there's so many, like, kind of cerebral enough to think like, well, addiction, like, is there a genetic component? Is there this component? Did it fast forward something that I was susceptible to anyway? Do you know what I mean? I've had all the debates of myself and ran around in the circles, but like, I don't know. But ultimately I stopped drinking and I haven't drank since, because that was the common denominator in a lot of life problems. And do you know what I mean? And I'm more, it's not that I have the answer, it's that I'm afraid to flip the coin to find out, if that makes any sense. It's like, why? Like, do you know what I mean? I have the wife. Like, the non-alcoholic stuff, like, that's changed the game, where like, before, even early doors was probably awkward. Like, it's hard to be in rounds with the lads, because if you're drinking a Coke, they're like, here, just go ahead, or you don't want to drink with a lad on a Luke's head, like, or whatever. Whereas, you know, I can have a whatever, Brony Zero, whatever. Like,
the 0.0 world has really improved.
Yeah, it has. And it's made, now I don't care about nights out, but like, if I am out, it's a lot more sociable, and and you get over your own hang-ups, and it forced me to actually like learn who you are. Because I always laugh about now, like, whereas, you know, when I was giving up drink first, I was like, it was a real thing. I was struggling to compute. I was like, right, so I'm allowed to talk to that person in a pub, but if I meet him in Dunn Stores, I'm not allowed to talk. Like, do you know what I mean? All the games of a local town or whatever. I was like, now I'm the same.
Town.
Whereas now I'm the same person wherever I go. I can't hide behind like six points. And,
So how long does that last? So like, from the drinking, like, does it, it reaches ahead, I imagine, because you ended up in this rehabilitation centre. So how did that come about? Were you brought there? Did you check yourself in?
No, I didn't check myself in. Like you don't end up going to a place like that without asking yourself plenty of times in your head, right, is there a problem here? Do I have a problem? But like, I wasn't brave enough to articulate to anyone outside. Whereas, like I said, the good support network was the bit there where there had been a couple of incidents probably along the roadmap, and they're like, you need to jump, figure some of this stuff out, and the actual piece itself, I suppose, I was like, the story goes, like, it was probably a 6 or 7 day bender, but like I went to a wedding on a Friday and went missing for the week. And it was, like, sometimes it's not even the drink, it's like the behaviour around it. Like, I just go AWOL, and parents, folks, no one, phone is off, whatever. I'm like fucking freeloading around the country. Like, you find someone else, you're onto this place. Like, they yeah. nearly had to send
everyone's
out
saying yes.
Yeah, they'd have to send out search teams to find you. Like, but anyway, so I, like, that was like 7 day at a wedding. And it was even some of the stuff around it. Like, my brother, we all played sport. Paul was on the under 21s right after me. He was goalkeeper. I remember missing, he was in a Munster final. Like, that shit shouldn't happen. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like, I care about my family, but like at that moment in time, I was caring more about self-destruction probably than whatever. And that big session led to a big low because I knew I'd missed Paul's match. I knew I'd missed a few things and I'd effed up here big time. And my sister lands up to the house, and this is about 3 days later, I was in a ball of depression. And she's like, look, don't know if you have a drink problem, but you're acting like someone that does, and they're all worried about you. And I was fairly broken as well. So a lot of these things are the timing as well.
Yeah.
Phone calls were made. And like I say, tender age of 22, I was going to Asheree. So I was like 28 days. And like, what do you know about these things only through telly when you're that age? Like, it's like, oh, this sounds like overkill. Because I wasn't going in for nearly 2 weeks later. I had freshened up a little. I was back to thinking, no, I'm grand. I'll be good. But no, ultimately, the best thing that ever happened to me in a weird little way.
This rings bells for you.
Yeah, did you find that your understanding of an alcoholic had to change? Because when I was at Burnley, I was a raging alcoholic, but I didn't understand what my version of an alcoholic was. Somebody who drinks out of a brown bag, gets up in the morning, starts necking whiskey and can't go 5 minutes without a drink. I spoke to Sean Dyson. He said, Keith, that's an extreme alcoholic, but somebody who depends on drink to alter their mood or to alter the way they act is an alcoholic. And my understanding of that hadn't changed. And you referenced there, you know, I wasn't drinking out of a brown paper bag, but, you know, I was drinking excessive amounts. Did you have to change the goalpost of what an alcoholic was?
100%. And then you're in there and, John, there's, it's a rotating system, so it's 28 days, but there's people that are on like day 20, there's people that are on day 1, so it's actually a great model in the sense that like you can see the arc that they've went on, whereas I'm going in raw, kind of still, even though I'm there and I've agreed to this 2 weeks ago and I said, yeah, I have a problem, but by the time I'm going in, I'm actually thinking, you know what, maybe I'm a bit different, maybe I'm grand.
The head is telling you shouldn't be here. I'm not an alcoholic, but I shouldn't be here.
And like you say, because the brown paper bag, the little archetype we build out for what that looks like, but like there's functional alcoholism, there's this, that, and then there's just the question, does drink just not suit you? You know what I mean? Like, it's like some people after 2 drinks, it's like, do you know what, like, stay away from them, it just doesn't suit them or whatever. But like, I suppose where I started kind of grasping it was like when you hear the stories and you're looking, you're actually seeing yourself in about 15 other people in this room, and there's a family day on a Wednesday, and you can kind of see the hurt you're causing and that kind of stuff. And it's like, is it? And you kind of realize it's not really an equation about if you drink X, it equals Y. It's more like, what's it doing to your life? Who's it hurting? What's it like? And it's like, and do you like who you are with it? And so I suppose that's,
even though, do you know those conversations, you say you're having a few drinks and then you know the tears might come out, you might say a couple of things that you generally wouldn't in everyday life. I've had them conversations when I'm drunk and you wake up the next morning and you think it was all meaningless. But if you can have them conversations when you're sober, they're so much more meaningful and they're lastful, because people understand then, this is a real thing. This is not Keith had a few drinks and he got a bit sloppy. This is what Keith is actually feeling. And I think there's huge power in being able to be your authentic self without any sort of, you know, something to mess with your with the way you are. So I think it's unbelievable what you're doing. And look, I've all sorts of stuff down here. You were obviously a very good footballer, a good hurler, brilliant at the cycling. Very good at running. Tipperary Person of the Year in 2019.
Yeah.
We should have started with that, really.
Should have started with that one, yeah. And
there's not that many people in Tipperary.
You just walk by Alan Quinlan on the way out. He's bitterly happy. And that was the last year Tip won the All-Ireland as well. It's a huge achievement to win in 2019.
Yeah, I suppose, actually. I didn't think of it that way. But no, it was... look, that came about... Again, I suppose sport life taught me a few different things, and did a cool fundraiser in 2018. We raised 92,000, cycled 2,250 kilometres in 122 hours.
This is race around Ireland.
Race around Ireland, yeah. So only slept for 8 hours in 5 days, which was
healthy.
Yeah. So look, I probably replaced the addiction with other stuff. But again, it was just this cool like sporting endeavor. But there was a life piece. There was three. I hate calling them sick kids, but there was three kids that are like getting full time care from their parents, and they are in hospitals, and so it is like. And I suppose that it just like it almost like felt like it rallied the whole county, which was this cool thing that I kind of get to say, John, like we created that. That wasn't an existing thing. So it was pretty cool. So
we should rewind for a second. So the treatment centre is it 2012?
2012. Yeah.
Okay. So you're at the lowest ebb of your life really at that point. How then, 7 months after first sitting on a bike in the winter of 2012 to become a national champion, how do you turn your life around so quickly, so spectacularly?
So treatment centre, just to give you the exacts, treatment centre would have been July, August 2012. And then it's literally a year later I would have won the national title. But I started cycling that January. So
interest in cycling to this point really, other than a kid with a bike?
No, like I kind of like didn't know anything about solo sports. That was actually the biggest transition for me as an athlete, going from team sports to individual sport. But look, I suppose left the treatment centre, bit of vigour, bit of, do you know what, need to figure this stuff out. It's not terminal. As I said last week, like it was put to me by a counsellor. He's like, you haven't tried to be visually impaired. You haven't tried a day. He's like, everything is just like, I can't. And I hadn't questioned, can I or can I not? So kept the counselling going, and like sport was jumping out. I was like, you're too sporty. You've too much energy. You've too much to give. Just get back into it. And I genuinely, and I've said this loads of times, and I apologise to anyone that's heard it, like, but I just like straight away, I thought, right, I heard there's blind soccer. I'm decent at soccer. Let's go play that. Bust a lad up against a wall, feel like I'm being myself again, and all will be good in the world. And I probably realised doing it, I was like, do you know what, I actually didn't enjoy playing sports that I used to play. There was still that bit of compare and contrast. It's like I was a fairly shitty version of who I was and what I was, whereas cycling was
That's very interesting, yeah.
Whereas cycling was this whole new like world that I'd never done, and I'd never, and it was, there was an upsurge in Ireland at the time. There was clubs popping up, so we had a local club then down in Tip, and there was a guy, Paddy O'Mahony, that was really given of his time and just his whole heart. He was helping out. He was like, here, I'll take you out on the bike. And that's how it started off, very, very innocently. But like, whether it was the past pedigree, whether it was, I suppose it was still down to, back to what I said at the start round, like, didn't realise how much I love sport until it was gone. And I was, all of a sudden now I'm starting to get back. And I was like, just grab on, see where this goes, and do you know what I mean? And just, and like that fear of failure thing, I was like, do you know what, I'm just going to throw myself into these positions and see where it goes.
Do you love cycling itself? Did you you needed something to replace the void, right?
Yeah.
So that was a tool to do that, the actual bike. But did it transition into a love of the sport itself?
It did, but I still wouldn't call myself a purist of the sport. I kind of realised I have a sporting mentality and I love competing, and this is a vehicle for me to compete. That's kind of what I figured out maybe later on. But I love, like, true sport. Like I say, I won that national title after 6 months. And that was only because, like, maybe pent-up frustration, maybe whatever. It's like, I just throw myself in. Won that, got called up into the Irish High Performance Squad. Like, 2 months later, I was going to Quebec to World Championships. Like, I genuinely, like, a year previous to this, say 12 months, 13 months previous in a treatment centre, it's like, I didn't think I'd get a train to go independently to Houston Station. Mm. Now I'm flying to Quebec. I was like, didn't know they speak French here. What's going on? Like, I'm wearing an Irish jersey. As much as I thought I was cool and hurling and this, that and the other, I was like, I'd never represent my country. I was like, I seen a value in that. I was like, now they're talking about Rio. It's like, you could do, like, join. It just, true sport, like, there was a lot of byproduct stuff being ticked that I thought, like I used to say, like, there was this huge list of things that I was just telling myself, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do that. Sport is gone. Disability means this.
You're saying that to yourself. This is internal monologue.
Oh, internal monologue, like all the things you can't do. And then you just get a shift in the momentum. And now all of a sudden, like say, you're back flying, and flying independently. I didn't want to fly where you're holding your mammy's hand. John, can wait? That's like, I knew obviously I can fly, but I was like, am I going to have the independence that all my mates are going to Australia, they're going to Canada.
Yes.
I knew, I was like, backpacking, oh, I want to do it, but I can't do it. John, like, so now I'm getting to see the world through a bike.
Well, one of your pilots in the paracycling said, Peter's a stubborn man. And like, you had a great example of it. You were at the Lumineers last year, was it, in St. Anne's Park? And you're like, I'm going to go to the toilet and I can do this myself.
Yeah. And it sounds, and people like, think you miss all these grand things or whatever, but like when you have kind of when you have a disability and you have something that's following you around daily, monthly, hourly, yeah. minutely, like it's like you just want normality. And as weird as that sounds, like it's just a bit of simplicity. It's like I'm at a concert. I should be at 33 years of age. I should be able to just mosey off to a Jack's and come back and meet herself, mm. and everything's grand. Whereas like you have this like say internal monologue where it's like, oh, do I ask for help? Do I not ask for help? Do I do this? Do I do that? And it's like you're giving away a bit of your like. I'm always trying to find what the limit of my capability is with this. Yeah. That's all a disability is. It's a trade-off between independence versus looking for help and the yin and yang of that. Anyway, it's like, yeah, I say I'm going anywhere or whatever and thinking I'm brave as hell and I'm going to... But sure, you're in St. Anne's Park and there's 20,000 people and sure, on the way back, I realise I ain't finding them. There is not a hope in hell. And I got to that point, as I was saying last week, I got to that point where I was just like, obviously, an innocent bystander could see Peter looks a bit frazzled here. I was probably walking around in a circle or walking into glass or doing something that visually impaired people would do. But in fairness to him, he came over and he doesn't know me from Adam, this dude. And he was just like, it'd be from the local town or whatever. And he's like, here, he's like, I don't know, should I come over or should I not? But he's like, I could see, do you know what I mean? You look a bit, whatever. He's like, do you want a hand? Who are you trying to find? Da, 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 da. And I was just like, it was such a, I always talk about it because I was like, he goes to me afterwards. He was like, he's like, I didn't know whether I should. We have only one mate in common, Jared Fogarty is his name. And he was saying, I didn't know should I, but I kind of asked myself, what would Jared do? And I actually thought it was just the nicest thing in the world to say, because Jared is one of the most like kind, sincere people in the world that you could know. And he's like, that's a cool way to live. Like, it's like, what would he do? What would he do? But anyways, yeah, we got through it. We got back and it was a good concert in the end.
A lovely comment here from PWell74, who's a regular. Brilliant chat, and you can feel the positivity from Peter. Would give you the positive vibe listening to him. Mm. And like, that's how inspiring the story is, because I'm always so intrigued by timelines of people's recovery. And like, for me, Peter, like you're going from the bender after that wedding to being a Paralympian and representing your country at the Paralympics.
Oh, laugh. That was 12. Treatment Centre was 12. Yeah. The Olympic Village was 16. So, like,
that's nothing.
And I kind of laugh. It's like, they were like both very different treatment centres. But, like, you know, everyone talks about the village. But when you kind of take a step back from, like, the, oh, okay, hey, cool, we're at the Paralympics, it's like, I was like 168 countries, 4,500 people. Like, they call it a village, but it's a full blown town. If you're from where I'm from, that's not a village. Do you know what I mean? We have 700 people. Like, it's, but like I said, the nations, and you sprinkle in the disability piece and what it means to have a disability in different countries. And I'm fairly sociable, so I end up trying to get into chats with people, and you're learning a bit more about their squad. Or you're kind of obviously trying to suss out, is their country better funded than our country? But like, in that, you're learning, like, John, like, I have a lot to appreciate, like Ireland's a cool country, all that kind of stuff. So it's like, as much as I was negative once upon a time, like, you kind of have to take a step back. And
when you're at the Paralympics representing Ireland, right, are you just overcome with pride about your own personal journey and recovery, or does the old competitive Peter come right back in, the tip minor hurler, the Kennedy Cup lad?
I love to talk about the appreciation and the gratitude, but like, that's kind of a hindsight thing. Like, when you're in it, you're in it, and you're trying to get to a corner ahead of a Dutch bike and you're bumping shoulders and like, no, you're not as profound enough to be saying like, wow, look at this. Like, don't get me wrong, you'll have a moment here or there in the village, you're walking down, you kind of have to, like, try to be an early riser more often than not, and you kind of have a look around.
Yeah.
I do appreciate in those kind of bits, but like, when it's game day, it's game day, and that's kind of what's keeping me. It's still feeding that itch as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a visually impaired version of most sports or every sport? Is there any sport that you've tried to throw your hand at that, you know, that just doesn't, there is no visually impaired version of it?
They're growing and the accessibility is kind of changing. Like, there's, weirdly, I always laugh though. Like, I'm mad for visually impaired boxing to become a thing, but it's it's like, I just think it would be both comedic and two lads swinging away.
And you would do that?
Oh, I definitely would, yeah. But I always say, like, since London, the games have grown. Like, I think a lot of the NGBs are getting on board. If they mightn't have a visually impaired version, but guaranteed they'll have some iteration of a disability version. So whether it's a wheelchair basketball, whether it's, so like visually impaired basketball, I don't really recognise it. I can't see it. But again, like say, the disability, you'll find something, and it's a bit of, like I said, maybe just moving the goalpost slightly. Because if I had been hell bent on like soccer and it didn't exist, sure, I'm saying I might never be happy again. So it's like, if sport is your thing, and what you find is like, like, I grew so much as a person. Like, it wasn't about cycling. Cycling was the tool I used, but the first race I ever landed onto, I was like, just, I still thought, oh, boo-hoo me, I'm the only one in the world with a problem. And you land onto this event. Yep. It was just a small pokey race in Roscommon, and like, you're meeting the boys in wheelchairs, you're meeting the amputees, you're meeting all these like other disabilities, and everyone has a story. Yeah. It kind of gets you out of your own little headspace where it's like, John, it's more about like how you react to these stories.
Totally. Look, Peter, this could be a Joe Rogan length podcast. We could go on for days here, honestly. I think like, I read like, this will be so helpful for so many people listening this morning who are going through hard times and there is a way out. Just briefly, how's life now? Like, what's a typical day and week for you now?
I'm a HR person. So no, I have a normal job. Normal, like, it's, John, sometimes you miss. And I weirdly went through it a second time where I retired during COVID. And like, I realised again, it's like, John, we're not built for retirement. Like, without making everything a big song and dance, I had to transition. I had to figure out at 30, like, okay, what job do I want to be? What this do I want to be? All that kind of stuff. I hadn't put enough time into that while I was competing. But very normal job. Work for Campion Insurance. I'm in recruitment. I have a wife, I live up in Dublin. I'm just ticking normal boxes, and at a certain point that's all you want. I have some cool goals, like I said, the running piece, kind of found through that cycling event, I figured out I love the ultra running stuff. I'm going to do more of that going into the future. I just find I still miss the sports, and I think some of these long distance events end up being good conversation starters around disability, around what you can do, around all those kind of things. So it's John, I'm going to try to keep life interesting around the 9 to 5 as well, and see what happens.
Listen, thanks a mil for coming in. Honestly, that's absolutely brilliant.